You missed my gag.
Yeah, so. We did. I'm very
Okay, well, I got people to say if they believed in conspiracy theories. The only person who was game to admit they believed one was that JFK, you know, was assassinated in, I assume, a nefarious plot. Other sort of questions or theories that people put around, did Epstein kill himself? Was the moon landing faked? Was 9/11 an inside job? These common conspiracy theories are taken up by a spectrum of people, from online jokers to total cranks and right-wingers. But they do bring up a couple of questions about our society. Does the government lie to us for their own gains? Are the rich and powerful abusers and pedophiles? Is there an elite that runs society without a thought for ordinary people? In many ways, these are all legitimate questions to have about our world and the system that we live in. But what happens when these questions develop into a totalizing worldview that sees the world as run by Bill Gates and a global elite that want to inject us all with microchips to control and track our movements? Well, you can end up with right-wing conspiracy cults like the infamous QAnon, many of its adherents storming the US Capitol building. One of my favorite, you know, members of that was Q Shaman with the big horns on his head. Also a small time actor and voiceover artist. If people wanted to check out his work. Or I guess to get more serious, there's also the great replacement theory that argues that whites and Europeans are being replaced by Muslims and Arabs. And this white nationalist idea has spurred on the far right across France, with figures like Marine Le Pen advocating the theory. There was also the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville with their infamous chant of Jews will not replace us, or closer to home with right-wing politician Fraser Anning spouting similar themes. So conspiracy theories can move from harmless cranks to actual right-wing mobilizations. And often people can start out with the first sort of just, you know, harmlessness and transition into the other. So my part of the talk is going to deal with the appeal of conspiracy theories, where they develop from, and the ramification of conspiracy theories when people begin to organize around them. Lewis is going to talk about what happens when people begin to organize around them, and I'm going to deal with the first half about the appeal and where they come from. So first off, why can conspiracy theories appeal to some people? Okay, so according to some studies, 50% of Americans believe in conspiracy theory. 29% of them believed that there was a deep state working against Donald Trump, and 9% believed the Pizzagate theory, that Clinton and White House officials were hiding a pedophile ring in the basement of a fast food chain restaurant, which actually led to someone going in and like shooting it up as well. In the age of COVID and QAnon, there's been a lot of discussion in the media about the rise in the belief in conspiracy theories. So one study showed that 18% of Australians believed that COVID deaths were exaggerated. And the study further revealed 33% of Australians are convinced. That can't be right. I've written it down that 33% of Australians are convinced that there's a cabal of a global elite running the world. That could be right. And 13% think that the moon landing was faked, and 20% consider global warming a hoax. But the question is posed, like, has there actually been an increase in the rise of people believing conspiracy theories? Well, it's not really true that these theories have reached new heights in terms of just the numbers of people who believe in them. In the United States, at least, the frequency of conspiracy thinking has remained consistent since the 1890s. And there was a 2014 study where these two guys, Isinki and Parent, reviewed over 120 years of letters to the editor from 1890 to 2010 from both the New York Times and the Chicago Tribune. And in over 100,000 letters to the editors, this review showed absolutely no change in the amount of conspiracy theory belief over time. In fact, the percent of letters about conspiracy theories actually declined from the late 1800s to the 1960s. The 1960s sees an uptick, and, you know, we've got a bit of reason why that 1960s is a very tumultuous time, and then also a decline in social struggles after that. So people trying to wonder about that. So I think there's been a bit of apolitical discussion in the media really about fake news, and all of this elevates the role and the novelty of conspiracy theories above their reality. And I think it's not helpful in understanding them or defeating them to just be like, there's so many more conspiracy theories and the world's going crazy. Okay, so why can they appeal? Well, most conspiracy theories center around a few things. The first is that there's a global elite that runs society. And the second is that these elites control the government and related agencies who in turn lie to us about what is actually happening in the world. From these two themes, conspiracy theories can stay fairly harmless or move into more dangerous right-wing territory. So let's start with the sort of the ones that are a bit more skeptical before tackling the far-right questions. I think those themes that I mentioned can have sway with people because there's actually a real truth to them. They can speak to an actually existing reality. Society is run by a small elite who control much of the way our world runs, and the government does constantly lie to us. So there's the Watergate scandal where Nixon broke in to the Democrat HQ, or the Catholic Church, which for decades has been covering up pedophile priests, moving them from diocese to diocese to escape any consequences for their actions. And today the Vatican continues to defend the likes of George Pell. Or there's the lie they told us about so-called weapons of mass destruction, lies told to justify and start a massive imperialist intervention into the Middle East, or events such as the World Economic Forum, which do bring together political leaders and big capitalists into one central location to discuss how they can structure and order and take advantage of our society. And so all of these examples, they're moments where sections of the ruling class undertook shady dealings, so like Watergate, or mass campaigns to undermine democracy or further imperialist interests, so like weapons of mass destruction. And reading about the way that many of these moments were sort of uncovered and revealed, you think about like backroom dealings, people having to use aliases, putting like documents into suitcases, flying them across America, photocopying them. Like all of this can lead you to sort of really have a sense that like, you know, all of this shady dealing does really happen. And well, if all of these things that people called conspiracy theories that then were revealed to be true, well, why can't other things also be true as well? So then it's not really a stretch of the imagination to argue that the moon landing was faked in order to elevate the US position vis-a-vis Russia in the Cold War. But the problem is that conspiracy theories take the truth and remove them from reality so much, often fitting them into these overarching theories and worldviews. These theories can help to explain a confusing and cold world where people have little power over their own lives and all the decisions are made at the top. They can also provide a totalizing worldview, something which explains all of the problems in our society. And they can have an internal logic in them, and they can calm the anxieties of living in modern day capitalism. Our society makes people feel like they have no control over their lives. We have no control every day when we go to work. Much of our lives are dictated by how much we earn. And most of the time, what we desire never matches up with reality. And in the realm of politics, everything is extraordinarily undemocratic. We don't get any control over the people who we elect, and usually they act with total impunity. And because of this sort of alienated, confusing reality, people look for ways to try and understand that. For some people, they choose religion, and religion can explain a lot of those problems. But for other people, conspiracy theories can fill that void. One sort of study that I came across looked at different reasons why people may believe conspiracy theories, and they found a key indicator for if someone was likely to take up conspiracy theories was if one had low perceived feelings of control over situations. And these feelings were acted upon as the need to exert one's control over their social environment, or feeling a desirability of control. When these feelings are acted upon, you can get things like, say, the Christchurch massacre. And Lewis is going to take up sort of what happens when people act upon these desires for control. And further from the study, they said right-wing authoritarianism was a positive predictor, a political attitude characterized by an obedience to an authoritarian leader, a deeply rooted mentality when it comes to traditional societal values, and a distrust of governmental structures. So these points, a feeling of powerlessness and right-wing politics being a positive indicator, as the study says, of belief in conspiracy theories, can also help us understand what I'd argue is the middle-class nature of conspiracy theories. So the middle class as a social layer, they have, like, little to no power. They oversee tiny sections of capital, shop fronts that probably are going to go bust. They might be small tradespeople or, you know, doctors' clinics, and they're squashed between the two major sections of our society. So the working class when they're an active social layer and the capitalist class on a day-to-day level. Also, the middle class have historically been a right-wing layer who provide support for groups such as the Nazi Party in Germany or Pinochet in Chile or the KKK, where a bunch of the people who were in the KKK were police officers and the like. And I think also there's the example of the Capitol Hill storming, which was made up of a lot of sort of middle class, but also elite and wealthy layers. And I wanted to read out a quote from one of the women who participated in it. She goes, her name's Jenna Ryan. She's a real estate broker from Texas who flew to Washington, D.C. on a private jet for the occasion to storm the Capitol Hill. And on a live stream on the way there, she says, "All these working class people taking the week off. We flew here for freedom. We the people are pissed off. We flew by private jet. God wanted us here today. Trump is my president." So these are the, I guess, types of people who I'm kind of talking about. And an article in The Atlantic says 40% of the participants are they're business owners or hold white-collar jobs. They work as CEOs, shop owners, doctors, lawyers, IT specialists and accountants. So, like, I think that's really important to think about in terms of, like, what's the sort of the common sense idea about who take up conspiracy theory? It's like dumb working class rednecks. Well, the people who stormed Capitol Hill are rich fucking lawyers. These middle class layers can be drawn to conspiracy theories in their anxious search for some ideas that give them some ballast. Conspiracy theories can make sense of the world around them and provide some answers about what to do. Maybe that's storm Capitol Hill. Maybe that's organize an anti-vax and the lockdown rally. And I think related to this is the way that middle class layers can flock to cults such as the Rajneeshpuram, a cult that was based around a Hindu guru in India. They set up a commune in Oregon. They were involved in assassination attempts, and you can watch, it's called Wild Wild Country on Netflix, good doco. Or, you know, there's Jonestown or Waco in Texas. And these people who join these cults are from disproportionately upper to middle class households. A study said they were from the advantage segments of the population. So these are middle class layers that are alienated, but they also got a sense of like the, you know, they can move around. They can easily like let go of their whole lives and join some random cult. But also they're actually sort of also university educated. They have to understand the sort of argument that's being put forward to then take it up then act upon it. And in contrast to the middle class, for the working class, when there's an active socialist movement, people can be provided with a different way of understanding the horrors of the modern system, and they can actually act to fight against these problems. The Marxist worldview explains that there's a tiny minority of society who have dictatorial control over the world. The difference is we don't think that they're cartoon-esque sort of villains in a little lair implanting microchips into people. They're people like Jeff Bezos and Rupert Murdoch who have a monopoly of political and economic power, and they use this power to maintain their position in society. They're not a satanic death cult, but I guess you could argue that. But they're bound to the death cult of profit and competition. the individuals that are at the center of many of the conspiracy theories. They're part of a class of people who run and control society, and not just in some shady backroom way. The ruling class have a lot of power and control. So they own and control the productive forces in society. Rupert Murdoch, he controls the press and a large proportion of the press, and so can use that to put forward arguments about society. George Soros, he's a financier with billions of dollars and so can put money behind things that he supports or whatever. Bill Gates, he owns an information technology empire. Most companies and schools and institutions will use Microsoft. This economic control that they have over society gives them political power as well. And with this power, they can create situations that are advantageous to them. Murdoch can use his papers to advocate for a government that won't disrupt his media empire. Gates and Bezos can argue against taxes that will impact their factories and companies. The ruling class want to maintain their position in society, or some of them want to promote particular governments to advance their political interests. The issue with believing some of the stuff that I ran through before is problematic in the sense that it lets the ruling class and the capitalists off the hook and obscures the reason why bad things happen. Conspiracy theories are wrong because they aren't actually dealing with the systemic problems and are wrong about why the ruling class acts in the way it does and doesn't tell us at all how to actually get rid of them. Surely some of the ruling class are scheming behind closed doors, but getting rid of just Bill Gates isn't going to fix the problem. If we remove the whole class through mass struggle and resistance, then we can get rid of the logic that rules our society, which is profit and competition. And we can't do that by just getting rid of those figures because it's more than just the individuals. There's the capitalist state, their institutions, and their oppressive apparatus like the police and the military. They are all problems that we need to overcome, and for that we need mass struggle and systemic change. And more than just being wrong, conspiracy theories pretty quickly get into dodgy territory. For most conspiracy theories, the subtext or just like the overtones are discussions about a shadowy elite. And that, I think, is an anti-Semitic idea of a powerful Jewish cabal running society. Consider the right-wing hysteria around George Soros, who, you know, hopefully everyone here has received their George Soros check, giving us all money to be lefties and, you know, undermine, you know, the world order. One of the origins for a lot of the modern anti-Jewish conspiracy theories is the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which was published in a Russian newspaper in 1903. The protocols, I guess to shortly sum them up, it's a book which is this dialogue between a Jewish elder and he's talking about the plan for the Jewish takeover of society. In the text are a lot of common tropes that Jews are schemers, powerful, present in many institutions. It was later printed by the major capitalist Henry Ford in the hundreds of thousands. It was set as reading in German schools during Hitler's reign, and today is a go-to text for many right-wing conspiracists. The protocols were an explicitly ruling class conspiracy theory, not about the ruling class, but literally fabricated by their agents in the Tsarist police to disrupt movements and try and create tensions between them and to stoke sort of racial divisions amongst the working class. So these protocols or anti-Semitic ideas like it have remained an important tool in the arsenal of right-wing governments. Consider today the Hungarian government pushing from the top, the Soros baiting. The government puts a lot of effort into targeting Soros, calling him a puppet master. And from Orban talking a couple of years ago around the election, I think it was, we are fighting an enemy that is different from us, not open, but hiding, not straightforward, but crafty, not honest, but based, not national, but international. Does not believe in working, but speculates with money, does not have its own homeland, but feels it owns the whole world. This is just straight up anti-Semitic dog whistling. And it's used to foster nationalist, anti-migrant, anti-left attitude in Hungary, which in turn bolsters the position of the government. And this is so similar to the way that the Russian state used the protocols when it was first put out. Okay, well, I've been going on for a while, so I'm going to try and go a bit faster because Lewis is going to talk about what this all looks like as a political movement. But really, really quickly before I finish, I want to talk about Alex Jones. So if people don't know Alex Jones, he's probably one of the most famous promoters of insane conspiracy theories, has got a lot of really quite entertaining YouTube videos that you can go and watch. I was going to have a little clip to show you a little bit about him, but I ran out of time. Maybe I'll do a little impersonation a little bit later. But he talks about how the New World Order, where global elites are engaged in a multiplicity of schemes and projects to eliminate 80% of the world's population. And he's the promoter of a vast array of theories, from Pizzagate to Bush did 9/11 to the totally bizarre idea that they're turning the frogs gay. Jones came to prominence in the 2000s and was a hardcore promoter of the Bush did 9/11 conspiracy theory. So sort of like a precursor to Q, Jones synthesized many popular conspiracy theories. He put out a lot of documentaries, and his rantings about the New World Order are all far right to the extreme, but they're also interesting in the way that they are focused against the government. So, for example, the way that New World Order posits that the elites are trying to eliminate the population. But that's also a part of the idea that also the elites are trying to perpetrate white genocide. So you can see the way that these conspiracy theorists, it's like the elites are bad, but also fuck Muslims and brown people and stuff like that. And Jones is useful to have a look at because he's an advocate of anti-science and anti-vax ideas, which in recent years have been a topic that have drawn more middle-class people into the world of conspiracy theories. And my favourite crossover between Alex Jones and the new age hippie stuff is he has a line of nutrients that he sells on his YouTube show, which is basically the main reason he has a YouTube show, let's be honest. Those nutrients that he sells, which are like invigorating man nutrients, they're also sold by Gwyneth Paltrow. Same brand, just a different label. And an example of this sort of crossover is also Pete Evans, who, you know, former TV host of My Kitchen Rules. He was promoting activated almonds and went from activated almonds to posting Nazi symbols on his Facebook page. And for a couple of years, he's been moving in with this territory. He's friends with conspiracy theories and anti-5G activists. And he and other wellness promoters introduce their followers to alternative lifestyles. But then they begin talking about the problems of really anti-science ideas and open up the space for right-wing conspiratorial figures to enter that crowd. Okay, I'm going to move on from that. And I think end, because I've been going for a long time. Yeah. Okay, well, I've argued that the problem is that conspiracy theories, whilst they try and make sense of a confusing world for people, they just actually don't make any sense at all. They lead people in a really terrible direction, and Lewis is going to talk about that terrible direction.
Thanks, comrade. Well, funnily enough, the main function of conspiracy theories in politics today is to form a base of support for reactionary elites like Trump. And as political movements, I think we can say conspiracy theories are just a wing of the far right. But it's important not to draw too sharp a distinction between the fascist far right with their full-blown conspiracy theories about Jews running the world and the more mainstream-ish right. As Annika pointed out, conspiracy theories haven't necessarily grown in size, and some of the claims that we live in a new age of conspiracy theories are overblown, but they have become an obvious feature of politics and consciously tied to a far-right political project. Trump and the Trumpified centre-right internationally have spent years promoting a worldview in which all opposition is part of a conspiracy of degeneracy and subversion. So in 2016, Trump described Hillary Clinton as the vessel for all the global special interests. Throughout his presidency, Trump and his defenders claimed that left-wing protesters were funded by George Soros, the Jewish capitalist who Annika mentioned. And in the lead-up to the 2018 midterms, the Republicans alleged that the caravan of Honduran refugees was full not only of murderers and Arab terrorists, but also that it was covertly funded by the Democrats and possibly also by George Soros. And then Trump blatantly manufactured the conspiracy theory that he won the 2020 elections as well. Campaigns for gender and sexual equality are now routinely described by Liberal Party politicians and right-wing commentators as cultural Marxism, as part of a conspiracy to break down sexual morality and the natural order. And climate scientists, doctors, and public health experts are derided as politically biased or serving some kind of shady interests. Peter Dutton claimed that white South Africans are facing genocide, which is just made up, and is a key plank of the white genocide conspiracy theory promoted by neo-Nazis. And in France, Marine Le Pen of the National Rally claims that France's adversaries, this is a quote, were waging a moral and economic war on the country to, quote, deliver it to submersion by an organized replacement of our population. And this is a great, this is a direct reference, if you didn't know, to the so-called Great Replacement Theory, which is that elites are trying to wipe out the white race by sponsoring mass immigration to white countries. So the National Rally are like a far-right party, but they moved into the mainstream. So Le Pen was actually the runner-up in the last presidential election in France. The deadliest conspiracy theory spread by elites of late is that COVID-19 was nothing to worry about. So Trump claimed the virus was no worse than the flu, and later that the infection could be cured by ultraviolet light or disinfectant. And Bolsonaro called the infection a little flu, and he's the president of Brazil, if you didn't know, and accused the media of hysteria and trying to trick people. And as we know, 2.8 million people have died because of that virus. So the effect of all this is to foster a nihilistic culture where nothing is as it seems, where no amount of evidence can be believed because anything could have been faked, where even the most outlandish claims of right-wing politicians are considered to be plausible. And it also helps give the more elaborate right-wing conspiracy theories oxygen and reach. And so there's a whole spectrum of conspiracy theorists' argument and belief, from the sort of culture war conservatives on one end to full-blown neo-Nazis, and from everyday lies and insinuations all the way to kind of the whole world's run by lizard people conspiracy theories. And I think these poles of the spectrum aren't walled off, but reinforce each other. So now I want to talk about how this culture of nihilistic conspiracism wins a base not just for the odious elites, but also strengthens and mobilizes the more hardcore conspiracy theorists far right. So many countries, we've seen them in Australia too, have seen protests against lockdowns and vaccinations, saying the virus is a hoax. Annika mentioned the anti-lockdown protests in Germany. Oh, no, she didn't actually, but she did in her original talk, which I read. these have actually been, so they're organized by like conspiracy theorists, a group called Kerdenka, which means lateral thinkers, and as well as the far right. And they've been really sustained, so they've just been happening like every couple of months since the pandemic began, and numbered in the tens of thousands, so they're actually pretty big. A few years before, we saw anti-immigrant street movements like Pegida in Germany and the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally, which have embraced conspiracy theories like the Great Replacement Theory, which you can see with the You Shall Not Replace Us chant. And then we have the true believers, whose whole view of the world is centered around shadowy figures pulling the strings and have just completely separated themselves from reality. The most visible example of a movement around this kind of full-blown conspiracy theory is QAnon. The basic outline is that the United States is controlled by a secret cabal of Satan-worshipping, cannibalistic pedophiles who run a global child sex trafficking ring. Donald Trump is the only person who knows about the conspiracy and is preparing, or was preparing when he was president. Depends who you ask. Some people think he still is the shadow president and everyone else is under house arrest. but is or was preparing mass arrests of the conspirators. And we know about this because a deep state insider known as Q posts anonymous cryptic messages online in incel forums, which is where Trump apparently wants to get the word out. And QAnon now has believers in Congress, amazingly, but I think the movement has taken a blow since Trump left office as well. the true believers are a small minority, but they can be a deadly threat. So one acolyte of the Pizzagate conspiracy, which is the precursor to QAnon, held up a pizza store with an AR-15, demanding to be shown the basement where Hillary Clinton was hiding the kidnapped children. And QAnon supporters showed up to Trump's Capitol Hill riot, armed with guns and cable ties to kidnap politicians, as you know. Robert Bowers, the killer who murdered 11 Jews in a Pittsburgh synagogue in 2017, determined that Jews were behind the invaders spoken of so much by Trump and the conservative press. And he wrote, there is no MAGA as long as there is a kike infestation. So a very clear you know, link he's drawing between his support for Trump and his hatred of Jews. Anders Breivik cited the great replacement of white Europeans by immigrants as justification for the massacre of dozens of children at a Labour Party youth camp in Norway, and the killer responsible for the Christchurch massacre also cited the same conspiracy theory. So to return to my previous point, neither these far-right movements, street movements, nor the terrorist attacks took place in a vacuum. They've been nurtured by more mainstream politicians who have traded in conspiracy theories for years. So now I just want to address why the far-right kind of in particular trading conspiracy theories. They really always have. So the far-right's kind of always had them as a core part of their ideology. The Nazis just saw Jewish plots as behind everything they hated about the world. And this is because fascism needs conspiracy theories to make sense of the world. Fascism accepts all the myths of capitalism and turns them into immutable, eternal truths. It makes a grand religion out of the fairy tales of conservative common sense. So for conservatives, race is real, nations are natural, and gender roles flow from biological necessity. In reality, all these supposed traditions are modern inventions, but conservatism imagines them to be timeless truths. But for fascists, they become more than that. Nation and race become the center of a theory of history. Human existence is seen as a struggle of nations, races, and religions. And divisions within nations, such as white leftists who work in solidarity with non-white migrants, need to be explained away. And so if white people are siding with people of color, they must be dupes. They must be being duped by someone pulling the strings. If the nation's not unified, it cannot be because of its own weakness. It has to be because of the influence of shadowy, powerful figures working against the nation from within. And I think this search for shadowy enemies really explains the quite remarkable persistence of anti-Semitism in far-right circles, which has maintained its strength even in a world where the right all love Israel and where Israel's rulers ally themselves with sections of the global far-right quite openly. In the fascist imagination, despite all of this, Jews remain the great enemy, the anti-national nation, the race of people who undermine racial solidarity. So there's another angle which I wanted to approach the question, which is why is it that sort of self-described skeptics who claim to be suspicious of elites end up as foot soldiers for elites like Trump? I think conspiracy ideology really forgives the very visible and public manipulation of the world by elites through the market and the ruthless pursuit of self-interest, and imagines that the real manipulation is going on behind the scenes. So it's not sort of George Soros, the capitalist, or Bill Gates, the capitalist, that's the problem. It's, you know, Bill Gates who donates to charity. Or, you know, the right are all freaking out about Jeff Bezos now, not because he's an exploitative billionaire, but because he donates to the Black Lives Matter, which apparently is the really shady thing that means that he's pulling the strings, not the obvious way he controls millions of people's lives. So it lets the capitalist system and their class off the hook. It targets scapegoats like Jews. These people take no issue with real attacks on freedom, like, for example, from law and order legislation, anti-terror legislation, but they think that fluoride and 5G are going to take our freedom away. And they're elitists as well. So conspiracy theorists view the masses as brainwashed sheeple. So in short, I would say conspiracy theorism is a right-wing pro-capitalist worldview. It's why a few years ago, people might remember, there were some conspiracy theories floated around that they sort of seemed to have a left-wing gloss. I wouldn't call them, they weren't left-wing, but like the 9/11 conspiracy and the Zeitgeist movement, and sometimes like okay people would pick this stuff up, but they never like led in any kind of left-wing direction. And it was, I think, in the last few years, the more open right-wingers have just been able to totally monopolize the conspiracy theorist space. And Annika mentioned like 9/11 truthers who became QAnon acolytes. So conspiracy theories just fit better with right-wing ideology. They just gel. And it's also why we have this kind of pipeline from unprocessed foods hippie to vaccine skeptic to Trump supporter that Annika mentioned as well. Okay, so one theme that we've talked about, that Annika mostly talked about, is that capitalism provides a soil in which conspiracy theories can grow. So we live in a world where people feel powerless, knocked about by elites. You know, they're conspiring against us all the time. We have this middle class who are sort of pro-capitalist business owners, but who also feel squeezed from big capital and governments and kind of search for these sorts of ideas and form their natural audience. And we have politicians from mainstream conservatives to the far right who use these sorts of conspiracy theories and try and give them oxygen. And I think, like, a lot of liberal commentators miss a lot of this, so they point the finger at Trump and the like for their role in fostering conspiracy theories, but beyond that, they just focus on, like, individual psychological reasons why people get pulled down the rabbit hole. So they talked about online echo chambers. One book I read had this long paragraph about, like, natural human curiosity and how important that is to understand, but I don't really think that explains much of why these theories fall on fertile soil. So as with the far right in general, liberals imagine conspiracy theories to be this anomaly outside of good mainstream politics where politicians trade in honest facts and reasoned argument. I didn't read all of it, but there was this book called The New Conspiracism and the Assault on Democracy, which argued that the main threat from conspiracy theories is the delegitimation of America's political institutions, which to the authors is a grave threat to democracy. So they lament that it's sad that politics has become so polarized. You know, politicians can't agree to disagree anymore. The press, shock horror, has been depicted as politically biased, can you believe? And people are even, and they seem really shocked at this, people reject the necessity of the specialized knowledge for governing. Imagine just thinking any idiot can govern. So, you know, this is kind of what the liberals think is wrong with this. And their stated goal of the authors is to rebuild trust in our political institutions. But let's just put things in perspective a bit. Dishonesty is part and parcel of bourgeois politics. Blair, Bush, and Howard just invented the blatant lie about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and were backed by, like, every liberal politician and media outlet in the world, pretty much. You can watch a popular compilation video online of Hillary Clinton stating her commitment to some issue and then stating the exact opposite position immediately afterwards on a variety of issues. And so on. So conspiracy theories differ from some of these more mundane lies in their implausibility, how separated they are from reality, and their elaborateness, but let's not exaggerate the degree to which they're a departure from the norm of bourgeois politics. You know, lies and manipulation are part and parcel of bourgeois politics. So I think that's why we have nothing to gain from trying to re-legitimize the rotten status quo. And in fact, doing so can just strengthen conspiracy theorists who feed in part off of the justified as well as the unjustified resentment towards mainstream politics. So liberal news sites have also tended to obsess about conspiracy theories and exaggerate their influence. So Annika mentioned the QAnon thing and how many people believe it. It's kind of interesting, actually. Like, this poll I found, it said 7% of people in America said they agreed with it. But then when they asked them specific claims, like, do you agree that there's this plot or that plot, most of them hadn't actually heard of the QAnon plots. So the people that said they agreed with it. So my interpretation of this is that there are a lot of people who aren't really true believers of the conspiracy theories but want to identify with it for some reason, like they like Trump. And interestingly, the same poll, and maybe you can't trust the polls, but the same one found 28% of people who approve of QAnon intended to vote for Biden. And by comparison, only 17% of white evangelicals said they would vote for Biden. So there you go. Conspiracy theories are just kind of one block among many supporting the far right. Okay. And similarly, I just wanted to mention, like, right-wing governments use conspiracy theories to cover up their crimes, but it's not like this drives every shitty thing they do. So, like, there are plenty of liberal and center-left governments that didn't spread conspiracy theories about COVID-19 being a hoax, but they did the same things. Like, they didn't lock down the economy and heaps of people died, for the most part, like in France, Germany, Spain, where the virus has just run rampant. And deaths are in the tens of thousands. So, and similarly, plenty of governments acknowledge climate change is real, but then don't take the steps to mitigate it. So I think we should see conspiracy theories as one ideological tool among many that rulers deploy and not kind of, some people do, exaggerate it too much. But so I don't want to downplay it. There is a role that conspiracy theories play in politics. They have become more organized, more cohered, more linked to a far-right project. They give right-wingers confidence to insist on their version of events when all evidence points to the contrary. They can be an extra pipeline into far-right politics for people with gripes about vaccines or whatever, and they can rally the far-right into a hard base. All right, sorry if we've gone over time, yeah. Just quickly wanted to talk about how we can sideline conspiracy theories from politics. Just run through this real quick. Often people address this question just from the perspective of, like, how do I convince my anti-vaxxer aunt or, like, my workmate who thinks the moon landing is faked? I'm not going to talk about that. For hardened conspiracy theorists, this is a pointless exercise anyway, but I think the main thing is the main reason I don't want to talk about it is we need a kind of broader political perspective and like what are the best arguments to use. I think we can't address conspiracy theories in politics in isolation from the far right in general. I think as long as the far right is strong, conspiracy theories are going to come into politics and we need to push them back. The second point is rebuilding the socialist left. We can provide a counter narrative about why the world is shitty that targets capitalism. And also when the working class fights together to improve their lives, it actually brings them into conflict with the real power structures of society and reveals how power actually functions. And it can bring workers of different backgrounds together and foster a sense of solidarity in the class. So for example, in Russia, before and after the 1917 revolution, the influence of socialism and the experience of class struggle meant that anti-Semitism was pretty sidelined and marginal among workers, and workers elected Jews to a series of prominent positions, even though it was one of their favorite tools, the favorite tools of the regime. And this is really the inverse approach to rebuilding trust in our political institutions advocated by the political scientists who I quoted before. We want to provide a counter-narrative about the ruling class that targets the system as a whole. We want to demonstrate not that the press is unbiased, but that they serve not the shadowy elites, but the ruling class. We don't want to, you know, reinstitute this kind of faith in the special knowledge of governing, but we want to point out how the ruling class have no fucking idea what they're doing and the masses could do a better job. We want to organize the masses to fight back against the ruling class, not pursue social peace. But I think ultimately conspiracy theories are an organic part of capitalism, and as long as capitalism persists, they will too. As long as there's people who feel powerless, buffeted around in a world run by elites, there's going to be some people who turn to these ideas. So if we want to get rid of them, I think only in a society where everyone is part of controlling their own destiny, in a socialist society, are we actually going to be able to eradicate this rotten politics of irrationality, hostility, and suspicion. That's all. Thanks.
I'll give Lewis and Annika a chance to sum up.
Well, in terms of why the turn of the middle class to conspiracies, I don't really know. Like, I think Annika pointed out, like, there hasn't really been an increase in the number of people who believe in conspiracy theories over time. I just think they've become more more sort of consciously used by the right in recent times compared to maybe, I don't know, the 20 years before that. So I don't think it's necessarily anything to do with, you know, capitalism in decline or whatever. I just think there is clearly a class basis for these kind of movements. Like, Annika went through some of the people at the Capitol Hill riots. And I went through as well, and I had a little table before I looked at Annika's talk and realized she did that too. But, like, it's so interesting. Like, there's people from, like, there's heaps of people from the military, and all the liberals are, like, falling over themselves, like, why would the military have these terrible ideas in them? Are we doing something wrong? Is it something to do with the culture? And not seem to click that it's because their job is to go overseas and kill people and they're brainwashed with nationalist propaganda. So that's pretty, and cops as well, and also capitalists and the middle class. As for why, like, some, like, small capitalists, like that realtor that who Annika quoted would see themselves as kind of victims being led around by an elite, I just think that the elite always think they're victims, and victims of something. So that's kind of like how they always talk about everything. The right are have a victim mentality. Anyway, I think the main thing is conspiracy theories are generated by capitalism in some ways. Like, the conspiracy theorists, like Omar went through, like, they kind of grab all these things people are concerned about and can see, but they're just really fucking right-wing. Like, everything about them is just a right-wing explanation for the world that says that the things you can see happening in front of you, the obvious and open ways in which the capitalist class manipulate the world, aren't the issue. It's something else going on behind the scenes, which isn't true. So, that's all I think. I just think, like, this idea that sometimes you see on the left that, like, conspiracy theorists have kind of almost made it, but then they've been sidetracked along the way is not really right. They're just really right-wing. So that's one take home.
Well, I think Xavier responded well to the question about the sort of Middle East and, can they hear me? Yeah, okay. About the question about the, like, Hong Kong and the Middle East. I think that those ideas can predominate the left is just a hangover of Stalinism, which says that these regimes like Syria or Hong Kong, or China, sorry, these regimes are actually anti-imperialist regimes, and so or they're socialist regimes, and if anybody acts against them, then they must be acting but because the American government has encouraged them to do so. So I think that it's like, yeah, it's not a left-wing response, but I think it's like it's a hangover of an ideology rather than just being a question of like people taking up or believing conspiracy theories, although there's potentially interplay between that. I don't know anything about pre-capital conspiracies, so I can't really respond to that question. And I think Lewis responded well to a question about the economic base. But the thing I wanted to finish on is something that I didn't get to include in my talk, which is that it's not just the middle class who believe conspiracy theories, and it's not just right-wing governments that push them either, but also it's just like the establishment that pushes conspiracy theories all the time, and like progressive liberal establishment as well. I think the biggest conspiracy theory that has existed in the last couple of years is Russiagate, and the idea that the Russians state were behind getting Trump elected, and that they, you know, got all these secret votes and worked so hard to get Trump elected. What? Trump got elected because America's a fucking basket case, and like the whole system is in crisis, and people could look to Trump, and the Democratic Party is not an option at all. And so the Democrats needed to fabricate a reason as to why Trump got elected. Blame the Russians. Like, so it's the liberal establishment that pushes conspiracy theories as well. And then their sort of class basis can take it up too. So I think on the whole, conspiracy theories can be very fun to read about. I like watching documentaries about them on Netflix, and it can be fun to sort of, you know, talk about Epstein killed himself. Of course he killed himself. Didn't kill himself. Like, but I think the main thing is that these conspiracy theories, they just become real problems. Like, it means that you can start looking at incidents like the Suez Canal blockage and be like, the reason why the cargo ship was blocked because Hillary Clinton's sex slaves are on them. No. This is a problem of capital, that it centralizes itself. There's just-in-time production. That's a far more coherent explanation for why crises happen. And if you just believe it's all because of Hillary Clinton, where does that lead you? Nowhere. So people should be Marxists instead.